Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan. Well, it's some summertime fun listening coming up today. We have a little detective work with Nick Carter, Master Detective. That's coming up in 30 minutes. But first, we're off to the hospital to visit with Dr. Kildare, and he's having money problems there, trying to expand the hospital. So let's listen in on the story of Buck Houston, cowboy star from 1951.
The story of Dr. Kildare.
Whatsoever house I enter, there will I go for the benefit of the sick. And whatsoever things I see or hear concerning the life of men, I will keep silence thereon, counting such things to be held a sacred trust. I will exercise my arts.
The story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer brought you those famous motion pictures. Now this exciting, heartwarming series is heard on radio. In just a moment, the story of Dr. Kildare. But first, your announcer. Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Jimmy, have you been to the children's orthopedic ward lately?
No, not in several weeks, I guess. Why?
Because it's so overcrowded, we had to turn away four youngsters this week. There were no beds for them.
Yeah, and no money to enlarge the ward either.
Yeah.
I guess it does take donations to add rooms to a hospital, but it seems to me that you can always squeeze in a few extra beds somehow.
Does, huh? Diane is waiting in the children's ward for me now. Come along and see for yourself. Well, Miss Verna, Dr. Kildare seems to think you can squeeze a few extra beds or cots in here somewhere.
Well, what do you think now, Jimmy, now that you're here?
Diana, I'll admit, it's so crowded you can hardly walk between the beds. We should take this up with Dr. Carew.
Why get irritated talking to him? Let's try to do something ourselves. All right, Diana, now where are those youngsters you wanted me to see?
Over there, Dr. Gillespie. There's Beth, who seems to be improving every day. And little Donnie, who... Well, he just doesn't seem to want to get better.
Donnie, yeah. Probably needs a pep talk, eh, Doctor?
He needs something, I guess. Something that's not in the textbooks. All right, Diana, let's see the girl.
Certainly, Doctor. Well, Beth, look who's here. Dr. Kildare and Dr. Gillespie. Got a nice big smile for them?
I'm getting better, aren't I, Doctor? I can go home soon, too, can't I?
I certainly think so, honey. Don't you, Doctor?
Oh, let me see you move that arm now, Beth. Well, better, girl.
Last week, I couldn't lift my arm any higher than this.
Uh-huh. And how high do you think you'll be able to lift it next week? Well, Beth, at this rate, you'll be home sooner than anyone expects.
He certainly will. And between the two of us, young lady, you're quite a little doll.
Oh, Dr. Gillespie, I think you're a doll, too.
Come on, Doctor, before we make Diana jealous.
Donnie, there are some friends of yours here who'd like to talk to you.
Why, Donnie, Dr. Gillespie and I came here to help you grow up to be an all-American quarterback.
Don't want to be no quarterback.
All right, then. All right. We'll make you an ace baseball pitcher. You got the arm for it, you know.
Don't want to be a...
Poor little guy.
Oh, come on now, Donnie. How are Dr. Gillespie and I going to check you over if you bury yourself in your pillow?
Go away, Doctor. Please go away.
That, will you stop crying if Miss Verna reads your story? Well, then, how about some nice new comic books?
I'd like some comics, maybe.
I thought so. Diana, how about going down to the magazine stand and getting Donnie some comics? New comics, huh?
Why, of course, Doctor.
And get the good kind, too. You know, the superheroes, the kind you always get for yourself.
Yeah, that's right, Miss Verna. The kind Dr. Kildare always reads over your shoulder.
Well, Donnie, we'll have you hitting on all 12 soon. You'll see.
Dr. Gillespie, please report to Dr. Carew's office as soon as possible.
What the tarnation does Carew want with me now?
Well, I wouldn't know, but since he is in his office, if you don't mind, I think I'll just tag along and see if he won't do something about this children's ward. Dr. Carew, I came along with Dr. Gillespie because I'd like to discuss the conditions in the children's orthopedic ward.
I am fully aware of them, Dr. Kildare, and I'm trying to find a solution. But at the moment, I haven't time to talk about kiddies.
Kiddies. Why the tarnation do some people have to call them kiddies? Is there anything wrong with calling them children?
Not at all, Dr. Gillespie, not at all. Huh. But I'm afraid I'll have to ask you to postpone this discussion. You see, we have a patient entering the hospital this morning who will require your complete attention as well as Dr. Kildare's.
Ooh. And who is the millionaire that can afford that kind of attention?
I am about to tell you his name, but in the very strictest of confidence.
Yeah?
He is a man I am sure you know as well as 150 million other Americans. Our patient, gentlemen, is none other than Buck Houston.
Who?
Houston, Doctor. Buck Houston.
Well, with Carew involved, I knew there'd be a buck in it someplace.
Oh, no, Dr. Gillespie. Buck Houston happens to be, to the current generation, what the Dead-Eye Dick was to yours.
Well, how old do you think I am?
Well, let's say old enough to be getting mellow, Doctor. However, to bring you completely up to date, Buck Houston is the country's number one cowboy actor.
By the great horn spoon, a cowboy.
Yes, indeed.
Well, Dr. Carew, what about Buck Houston?
He's here in New York to make personal appearances. And his physician, a former colleague of mine, just telephoned from Hollywood to tell me that Mr. Houston is entering Blair General Hospital on his recommendation.
Well, what's wrong with this actor? Trying to wear a 10-gallon hat on a 5-gallon head?
Not at all. From what I gather, he's suffering a severe back or leg injury.
Oh, probably fell off a horse.
I don't believe so, Dr. Kildare. However, he'll be here within the hour, and I'm expecting both you and Dr. Gillespie to examine him, and furthermore, to remember that there is to be absolutely no publicity.
Anytime you got a case in the hospital, Carew, where there's no publicity, I'll be there just out of sheer curiosity.
Now, as I understand it, Mr. Houston...
Wait just a minute there, you young sawbones. I ain't Mr. Houston to nobody. I'm just plain Buck.
All right, then. Buck, now the pain you're complaining of seems to go from the sacroiliac joint in your back running down here into your thigh and all along your leg?
Ouch! Yeah, it goes just about that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Gillespie?
Well, this-a-way or that-a-way or any way you're figuring it out, it seems to be sciatic neuritis.
Sciatic? What did you call that again, Doc? I didn't quite get that ear down.
Sciatic neuritis, Buck. It's an irritation of the sciatic nerve brought about by, well, something we will now have to determine.
Did you have a fall from your horse?
From good old Storm Cloud? No, sirree. Why, Storm Cloud's the greatest partner a man ever had. Compadres, man and boy. Ever since he is a colt, me and Storm Cloud has been just like that.
Well, then, have you any idea what might have caused it?
No, I ain't. But I'm telling you, this hurts so bad, I'm about to throw a rubber-tail hissy fit. I don't even know whether I'm going to be able to ride my show. And that would sure disappoint a heap of kiddies. Why, Doc, now, don't tell old Buck that you don't like youngin'.
I just don't like anyone calling young uns kiddies.
Miss Verner, would you take the blankets off, Mr. Houston?
Certainly, Doctor.
What you up to, Doc?
Oh, just a few preliminary tests, Buck. Shouldn't bother you at all.
He hopes.
How's that?
Tain't no better, tain't no worse.
Yeah, no diminution of the ankle reflexes. Try the Lesage test, Doctor.
Good idea. Here.
Now, hold on there, Doc. Now, what you doing with my leg?
Just moving it up towards your abdomen. That hurt?
No, don't hurt none. The shore ain't comfortable, neither.
Diana, will you call X-ray and arrange for a series of plates on Mr. Houston?
Yes, Doctor.
Complete set on the lower back, especially sacroiliac.
Yeah, and while you're at it, nurse, have them run a Pantapac myelogram for lesions.
Well, goodness, Doc, kept there sounds real serious.
You know us old sawbones try to make everything sound serious.
What we want to do, Buck, is not only relieve you of this pain, but stop your condition from becoming any more serious so you can get to your show.
That's right. We wouldn't want you to disappoint them, their kiddies.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Oh, for the love of Hippocrates, Carew, will you stop old dearing all over the place? Leave Jimmy and me alone till we check these X-rays and lab reports?
Well, all right. But you've got to do everything you can.
Well, what do you make of the X-rays, Dr. Gillespie? Detect any tumors, any indications of arthritis?
No herniated discs either, judging from the plate.
And still he exhibits positive symptoms of sciatic neuritis, except, of course, there was no Lesage sign.
And the ankle reaction was negative.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice his eyes?
Eyes? No, why?
Well, they're old, Jimmy. Old and bored and tired.
Oh, he gave his age as 38. Certainly you don't call 38 old.
Well, Jack Benny says he's 39. No, sir, I'm afraid Houston's reported age misses the truth by close to 20 years. A young man, I'm old enough to know.
Oh, yes. Dead-eye Dick, no doubt. Old or not, I think that Houston's sciatica, as painful as it may be, is all in his mind. Psychosomatic.
Great gilded glory, Jimmy. Is it psychosomatic when a man's middle-aged and worn out from those blasted kiddies he keeps talking about?
Well, I don't know about that, but either way, we've got to question him. If we can coax the truth out of him, we'll soon find out who's right.
Well, before we question Buck Houston too much, my professional advice is you rope him to the bed with your stethoscope while I ride to get the posse at Eagle Pass.
We return to the story of Dr. Kildare in just a moment. Continue with the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Well, the two old sawbones, come in, come on in.
Afternoon there, howdy, partner.
Buck, Dr. Gillespie and I would like to talk to you confidentially.
You mean, compadres, that you've cut sign on this thing that's got poor old Buck bedded down?
Buck, I'm sorry to tell you this, but we think that between us, we have.
Sorry, shuckings. This is the happiest day of my life.
Now, today may have started out that way, Buck, but what Dr. Gillespie and I are going to tell you, we don't think is going to be particularly good news.
You mean I ain't going to be able to make my show? And I'm going to have to disappoint all them thousands of kiddies?
No, you're going to be able to make your show. Buck, there's nothing wrong with you that isn't in your mind.
Oh, now, look here, Doc.
You know, there's an old saying out west that goes, you can't fool a horsefly. And here in the hospital, Buck, you can't fool the doctor.
Well, my doors and slippers, are you aiming to say that something's Andy Godlin with me upstairs in my head?
Oh, certainly not. At least not the way you mean. Buck, the way I figure it, for some reason, you're resentful of being the popular hero that you are. And that's brought about a deep sense of guilt inside you.
Besides, you can't fool an old man. And, Houston, you're past 50, and you know it.
Well, I'm a got-eared sifficat.
You know, this isn't a pleasant thing to have to tell a patient. But we're not denying that you are suffering from a mentally induced sciatica. Because no matter how it's induced, sciatica is painful, very painful.
Well, I know, but...
Now, if you'll cooperate with us, let down your hair, Buck. Dr. Kildare and I hope we can show you what's causing this sciatica and get you out of here feeling like a new man. Yeah, now that's pretty far and square, ain't it, partner?
Well, doggone. That gummit, I didn't never think...
Well, Buck, have you got the intestinal fortitude to face the truth?
Oh, what's the use? You've hit the nail right on the head.
By the great horn spoon, Jimmy. You hear that? He's lost his Western accent.
Well, why shouldn't I? If I talk anything, I ought to talk straight New York.
You mean you were born here?
53 years ago, Doc. That's where I got my stage name, Houston.
But Houston's a famous Texas name, Sam Houston.
Sure, but it's also a famous Lower East Side name, the street where I was born. Except here in New York, you pronounce it Houston.
Well, you fooled me.
That's the trouble, Doctor. I fooled everybody too long.
Oh, what do you mean, fooled?
Oh, it was all right when I first hit it lucky as a movie cowboy and a few kids would stare at me, but so help me, afterwards it grew to be thousands of youngsters following me around. Overnight there came to be millions. And then they wouldn't go to sleep without Buck Houston pillows and Buck Houston blankets, and they wouldn't eat unless it was out of a Buck Houston plate or a Buck Houston cup.
Well, Doctor, that's the guilt complex, isn't it?
Maybe. But we've still got to find out what made him give in to this defensive sciatica. I think it could be weariness.
Weariness? Have you ever made 20 personal appearances in one day? Have you any idea what it means to pick up 40 and 50-pound youngsters and haul them up on top of your horse so they can have their pictures taken when you're hardly able to lift your arms after 10 hours of it?
No, but we're starting to get a good idea. What else, Buck?
What else? Isn't it enough knowing that you're a worn-out man who has to have a double to do everything but mount a horse? And these kids thinking you're some sort of a...
I guess that pretty well fills in the picture, eh, Doctor? His subconscious supplied the sciatica so he couldn't be forced to appear before the public in person.
Mine's a strange thing, Buck. And you shouldn't feel too bad about giving in the way you have. Why, after a few days' rest here, now that the real facts have come out, you'll be able to ride around town carrying 5 youngsters on your back.
Oh, no, not me, Doc. No, not me. Don't you see? I'm through. Now that the truth's out, and I know it's the truth, I can't go on fooling him anymore. I just can't.
Now, look, Buck, we'll give you some sedatives, 3 days of rest, a tonic to build you up.
Will you just go away now? Go away. Go on away. You found out what you wanted to know, didn't you? Go on. Leave me alone. Buck Houston's all through.
Oh, but look here.
Come on, Jimmy. Come on, Jimmy. After 30 years of holding it all in, 2-hour cry isn't going to do Buck a bit of harm.
Dr. G, why do you refuse to face facts? Between us, we made Houston face facts, and now he wants to throw his whole life away. Quit.
Well, why shouldn't he quit? He's tired. He's old.
I know, but I'm tired. You're aging, but are we quitting?
Oh, tarnation, Jimmy. Why should Buck go on? He can afford to retire. Best thing that could happen.
Well, Doctor, maybe retirement seems more attractive to a man of your years. Your mellow years. But for me and for Buck Houston, there's still a lot left in life. And whether you will help or not, I'm going to try to make him realize it. For his own sake and the kiddies.
Q
Kildare, I'm telling you for the last time, I am not putting those cowboy clothes on again.
But, Buck, you don't want this sciatica to come back, do you? We have a very strong feeling that if we can take an X-ray of you wearing those cowboy clothes and those high-heeled boots, it may show that the boots or something else cause a pressure on a nerve, which means the sciatica could come back again anytime as long as you live.
No.
Oh, come on, Buck. Slip into that cowboy regalia and walk down to the X-ray lab with me.
But you told me the thing was all in my mind.
I know we did, but now we think we may have made a mistake. And if we did, we want to correct it.
Well, you already took X-rays dozens of...
But not with your clothes on, don't you see? And we think that's where we made our mistake. Well, Buck?
Okay, if you say so. After all, you're the doctor.
That's the spirit. I'll get out while you're getting dressed, and then I'll take you down for your last trip to X-ray.
Is this the way I went to X-ray before? Seems to me it was on the other side of the building.
No, we have another X-ray room in this wing.
Oh, I see. Oh, here comes Dr. Gillespie.
Yes, I see, Buck. All right, now let's go through this door.
Wait a minute. Buck, where are you going all togged out in that outfit?
Oh, in the X-ray room here.
X-ray? Well, the X-ray room's way in the
other... It's right through this door. Come on, Buck. See you later, Dr. Gillespie.
Right on, nation. I don't know what you're up to, Jimmy, but I'm coming along.
Hey, Doc, this isn't X-ray. This place is full of youngsters.
X-ray, Well, maybe it is, Jimmy. I can see clean through you right
children,
now.
Children, will you quiet down, please, because Dr. Gillespie and I have a surprise for you. Now, see who we brought to visit?
Well, I'll be blamed to know him.
You see, Dr. Gillespie, there isn't a child in America who doesn't know him by sight.
Well, howdy there, partner.
Howdy.
Hi.
Mr. Houston, will you come over here so I can touch you?
Well, now you look here, Sugarfoot. I ain't Mr. Houston to nobody. I'm just plain Buck.
You wait just a second, Beth. You see, Buck came up here especially to see Donnie. Come on, Buck. Doctor?
No, what?
Donnie? Donnie, we brought someone here who wants to meet you.
You can't fool me. Nobody wants to meet me.
What is that? Why, I come all the way from my ranch here to New York just to meet the littlest big man I ever heard about. What's his name, Doc?
Donnie O'Brien.
All the way to New York to meet Donnie O'Brien.
Jiminy Christmas. It's really Buck. Buck Houston.
Well, howdy, partner. Putter there.
Golly. Gosh.
Come on up here, son. Old Buck wants to get a good look at you. Easy does now. There we are.
Well, what do you think, Buck? Hasn't Donnie got the makings of a real He-Man cowpuncher?
Why, I ain't never seen a better one. And by darn, if his folks will let me, I'd like to sign him up to a lifetime contract right now. Wrangling horses and punching cattle on my ranch.
Gee willikers, Buck. Do you mean it?
Tell him he's got to get well first.
What's the matter, Buck? I bet you don't mean it.
When you say that to Buck Houston, Donnie, you better smile.
Old cornball.
But I was just thinking now, Donnie. You got to get well first. You reckon you can do that for your old partner, good old Buck?
Oh, gosh, Buck. Sure I can get well. I can get so well they'll let me out of here next week.
Well, I don't know about next week, Donnie, but I think if we take Buck back to Dr. Gillespie's office now, we can have him put his name to that contract, and we'll guarantee delivery of a perfectly healthy Donnie O'Brien to the Double Bar X Ranch by the end of next month.
In just a moment, we will return to the story of Dr. Kildare. And now, once again, the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Well, Buck, I can't tell you how much everyone at Blair Hospital appreciates this check for the addition to the children's ward.
Oh, forget it, Doc. You earned it the way I earned it in the first place, by acting.
You call him an actor?
Well, I sure do, and a convincing one at that. The way he talked me into thinking I was going to X-ray.
Well, when a man's got his mind made up where a thing's a fact, sometimes takes a little white lie to show him the real truth.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that youngster, Donnie, is going to get well now?
Oh, no question about it. Buck, not only did you give that youngster the desire to live, but you gave him something much more important. You gave him hope. You don't have to be young to have hope. But if you've got hope, you've got a mighty good chance of staying young.
Yeah, and I'll say yes to that.
Well, goodbye, Buck. And, don't forget those seats you promised us for your show.
Oh, why, compadres, the last man that accused Buck Houston of forgetting a friend's buried now. Up on Boot Hill.
Well, by John Nation, you've forgotten something. And I'm not signing your discharge from this hospital till I get it.
Till you get it? What is it, Doc?
You're not leaving here till I get a picture, personally autographed and reading, to the old sawbones, Doc Gillespie, and all the kiddies. Signed, your faithful compadre, Buck Houston.
You have just heard the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. This program was written by Paul Franklin and directed by Joe Bigelow. Original music was composed and conducted by Walter Schumann. Supporting cast included Ted Osborne, Georgia Ellis, Barton Yarborough, Johnny McGovern, and Mary McGovern. Dick Joy speaking.
Well, at this point in the show, I'd like to remind you that we have a streaming station called the All-Time Oldies Radio Theater Channel, and that's available at oldtimeradiolisten.com. You can hear 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, great old-time radio shows like the ones you hear here. They're on the air all the time. Go to that website. You'll find the schedule for the stream, too, up there posted under the blog page, www.oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now it's time for Nick Carter, Master Detective, and the Case of the Demented Daughter. This is from 1946.
What's the matter? What is it?
It's a case for Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Yes, it's another case for that most famous of all manhunters. The detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction. Nick Carter, Master Detective.
But, Dylan, it's true. I know it's true.
But it's not true, June, darling. Don't you suppose I'd know it if you were going crazy?
But why do I hear these noises all the time? Why am I so cold when it's really warm in here? Why
Listen, June, you're just working yourself up over nothing. Now, why don't you
relax? Holly told me my mother acted the same way, Phyllis.
My husband didn't mean that.
But then Mother heard noises like thunder in her ears. He told me that she was cold and shivering no matter what the temperature was. Alex told me that.
Well, even if that's true, it doesn't prove.
It does. I'll kill myself before I let them take me away. I won't go to an asylum. I won't. I won't.
A young girl convinced that she is going insane. A fiancé who is not convinced, who doubts that it can be true in spite of the evidence. An appeal to Nick Carter, Master Detective. The uncovering of a strange and unnatural plot. Not for money, not for power, but for hate. This is the story unfolded in The Case of the Demented Daughter.
That must be Randy Wyeth. I made a date for him to see you at 10:30.
Is Mr. Carter here yet?
Yes, he is. Won't you come in?
Thank you. Mr. Carter?
Yes?
I'm Randy Wyeth. Your father and mine used to be pretty good friends. That's why I'm taking the liberty of asking you to help me now.
Why, no liberty at all. Come in, sit down.
Thank you, sir.
What seems to be the trouble?
Well, last night I got this note from the girl I'm engaged to. She sent my ring back with it.
May I see it? It's no use, Randy, darling. I'm doomed. And I won't have you burdened with an insane wife. So this is goodbye. Your heartbroken June.
I tried to call her as soon as I got the note, but the housekeeper wouldn't let me talk to her. Said she was too ill to come to the phone.
Well, have you seen any signs of this insanity she speaks of?
I know, and I don't believe it. There's been something funny going on somewhere. She's been a little more nervous than usual when we've been out together this past month, but that isn't insanity.
You say when we've been out together. Does that mean that you don't see her at home much?
Well, for the past month, she seemed to prefer to get out of the house. Doesn't want to stay home anymore.
Well, have you seen her at home at all?
Well, I was there one night about a week ago. Her sister Phyllis and her brother-in-law, Alex Benson, were out, and we spent the evening there alone.
Did she seem to be the same as usual?
Why, except for one little thing, yes. She complained that she felt cold, almost shivery. The house was cold, even for me. The thermometer said 78, but it wasn't as warm as that in there. But the fact that she was cold when the thermometer said 78 seemed to prey on her mind. I tried to tell her the thermometer was wrong and that I was chilly, too, but she insisted I was just being nice to her.
I see. Well, is she any reason to be afraid of going out of her mind?
When I was waiting for June the other night, Alex, her brother-in-law, warned me that she was acting queer. Said he felt I ought to know. Told me her mother died in the Harrah Hill Sanitarium. I tried to laugh at him, but he insisted he and Phyllis had seen definite symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else live there with June beside Phyllis and her husband?
The housekeeper, Miss Everett. A cook and a maid.
They must have plenty of money.
Oh, yes. June's father was a rich man. And he left his entire estate to be divided between the two girls.
How long ago did her mother go to the sanitarium?
Let me see. June was six then, so it must have been 1932. She died there in 1940.
I see. What does this Alex Benson do?
He has a very good business, I understand. Doing very well.
And this housekeeper you spoke of, has she been with him long?
Since a couple of years after Miss Kemper was taken away. She's a peppery old lady, but an excellent housekeeper. She and Phyllis brought June up.
I'd like to talk to your fiancée, Wyatt. Can you arrange it?
That's what I'd hoped you'd say, Mr. Carter. June isn't crazy, I know that. Just as sure as I know my own name.
Well, when can we see her? Around 5 this afternoon, perhaps?
We can try. Where shall I meet you?
You better be here at the office about 4:30. We'll go up together.
I'll be here. Oh, Mr. Carter, I do hope you can straighten this out.
I'll certainly do what I can, Wyatt.
You're swell, Mr. Carter. Well, see you at 4:30. Bye.
So long.
Goodbye, Mr. Wyatt. Oh, the poor kid. Losing her mind at her age.
I'm not at all sure she is, Patsy.
Huh?
Look at this note she sent Wyatt.
Well, what about it? Writing looks awkward, but she was probably upset.
Oh, look closely. See how the pencil bears down much harder in some places than in others?
Yes.
And it's not always in the places where the lines would naturally be heavier.
Which means?
One explanation would be that somebody was guiding her hand, forcing her to write this.
Oh.
Patsy, I think we'll do some checking up.
Okay. What'll we do?
Call Scubby the paper. Ask him for a full report on both Phyllis and Alex Benson.
Uh-huh.
The society doings and any other information he may find in the morgue.
Yeah.
Also tell him to check up on Alex's business and financial rating.
All right. Anything else?
Yes, I want you to call on the housekeeper. Give her some excuse. Find out all you can about her.
I'll tell you what. I'll pretend I'm making a checkup of the conditions under which housekeepers work for some magazine, say. That'll do it.
Good. While you do that, I'm going down to the surrogate's office and take a look at the father's will. If there's any conspiracy going on, there's very likely to be money involved.
Okay, Nick. See you here as soon as I get the dope by Mrs. Everett.
As I told you when you called, young lady, I can give you only a few minutes.
Well, I'm glad you could see me at all, Mrs. Everett.
We can sit here in the breakfast room.
Thank you.
Now, ask your questions and I'll answer them, if they're not personal.
Well, they are personal, but only in a general way. How long have you been here?
Since 1936, the year after Mrs. Kemple died.
Uh-huh. Had you worked previously?
I had. 14 years. 2 jobs. In each case, I left because I was offered more money. If somebody offered me more money than I'm getting here, I'd leave tomorrow.
Are you married, Mrs. Everett?
I was. My husband died.
Any children?
I have not. I hate them.
How do you find working conditions here?
I've seen better and I've seen worse.
How do you get along with your employers?
Mr. Kemper was a fine man. We got along well.
Oh. Do you mean you're having trouble with Mr. and Mrs. Benson?
No, Phyllis and Alex are all right. We get along well enough, but that June, I can't stand her. I never could.
Oh, Do you have any special reason to feel that way? Or is it because you don't like children?
She's a brat. Always was. Used to play tricks on me when I first came here. Left a toy wagon for me to stumble over when she was little, and I fell and broke my ankle. I'd have left here then, but Mr. Kemple offered me so much money I couldn't afford to go. But I've made that June pay for what she did. Why, I'm talking too much. What else do you want to know?
You wouldn't want to tell me what they pay you here, would you?
I wouldn't. I told you not to get personal. Now, I got to go. Good day.
Goodbye, and thank you, Mrs. Everett. All right, Scubby, I'll tell him. Thanks. Goodbye.
Oh, hi, Patsy.
Hello.
How'd you make out?
Here's a typewritten report of my interview. I didn't like that Mrs. Everett at all.
Well, she doesn't like June, huh?
Mm-mm.
Well, good work, Patsy. That covers it.
You really like it, Nick?
I do. Get your hat. We're taking a ride out to Harrow Hill Sanitarium where Mrs. Kemple died. I want to talk to the doctor out there.
Right with you, Nick. Waldo went out after you phoned, but he'll be back pretty soon.
Have you heard from Scubby yet?
Oh, yes. He says he found plenty of stuff about Phyllis and Alex, but nothing you'd want. Except that Alex's business is in a pretty bad shape. He needs to expand and has been having trouble getting capital to do it.
Yes?
Guppy says he couldn't find out whether he'd put any of his wife's money into it or not.
I see.
What'd you find out at the surrogate's office?
I found that Mr. Kemple left a large fortune, divided equally between the two girls. But there were two interesting clauses in the will.
Hmm?
One was that should either daughter develop a mental weakness of any kind, the other daughter was to have control of the money and administer it for the other's benefit.
Hey, Nick, that's something.
And the other, peculiar, is a statement that since the circumstances surrounding the birth of the two sisters were fully taken into account in drawing the will, no claims on that basis were to be allowed under penalty of forfeiture of all rights under the will.
What in the world does that mean?
Wish I knew. I called the lawyer who drew it, but he refused to talk about it. So I'm having Waldo look up the birth certificates of both girls. Might be some help there.
Uh-huh. You think the doctor at the sanitarium could help you?
I don't know. I hope so. That's one reason I want to have a talk with him.
I'm sorry I can't be of more help to you, Mr. Carter, but my knowledge of the Kemple family is limited to Mrs. Kemple herself, as I said.
Doctor, tell me, did Mrs. Kemple know what was happening to her?
Oh, yes, some years before it actually happened, it became evident that sooner or later she would have trouble. Hers, as I said, was a case of schizophrenia, split personality. And in her case, the other side of her was homicidal.
But you say it can be inherited, Doctor.
It can be, but fortunately, it rarely is.
Well, thank you for your time, Dr. Lennox, and for your information. I think it'll help us to get to the bottom of this.
Turn left here, Mr. Carter. The Kemple place is halfway down the next block.
Nick, did I hear Waldo telling you he could find only Phyllis's birth certificate?
That's right, Patsy. No record of June's birth at all.
Hmm.
Wife, do you know where June was born?
No, I don't. Oh, by the way, Mr. Carter, I tried to get in touch with June to tell her we were coming, but the housekeeper wouldn't let me speak to her. Said she was asleep. Darn that woman, I don't trust her at all.
Is this the house?
Yeah, that's it.
You'll have to wait in the car, Patsy. Mrs. Everett knows you.
Right, Nick.
I hope we can get in.
Oh, I think we'll manage somehow.
If Phyllis is here, she'll let me in.
Maybe there's nobody here. Think I hear someone coming.
When there's somebody sick in the house, you ought to know better than to make so much noise.
Mrs. Everett, I'm sorry, but we must see June Kemple at once.
She's in her room and in no condition to see anyone at once. Who are you?
This is Mr. Nick Carter, Miss Everett. Please let us see June.
Hmm. What's a detective doing here?
I'm not here as a detective. Rather, as a friend. May we see June?
Very well. She's in her room. You can go up, but make it as short as you can. She's sick.
Thank you. Come on, Mr. Carter. I can't understand Miss Everett's dislike for June. She never has a good word for her.
Some people are like that, Wyatt. Some people just don't
see... Randy! Randy, help! Help!
That's June. Come on.
Oh, Randy.
June, honey, what's wrong?
I couldn't open the door. I couldn't make my hands open the door.
It was probably stuck, Jean.
No, it wasn't the door. It was me. My hands.
Why, what do you mean by that, Miss Kemble?
It's just the way my mother acted when she was sick. Alex told me about it last night. She couldn't make her hands do what she wanted. I tried to open my door, and I couldn't. I just couldn't. I had to try and try before I could get it open. Oh, Randy. It was like a nightmare. A horrible nightmare.
Come now, honey. Don't cry like that. I just can't stand it. Please, honey.
What? Look here.
Oh, what is it, sir?
Notice this?
Why, it... Well, that's wax, isn't it?
It is. Wax that someone stuffed in the latch of a door to make it difficult to open. Not impossible, just difficult.
Then there is a plot to drive her insane. I knew it.
Either that or a plot to make her think she's insane. Nothing very mental about a piece of wax and a door lock.
Listen, June, honey, marry me right now. Let me get you out of this house. You'll be safe once I get you away from here.
Oh, no, Randy, I can't. It wouldn't be fair to you.
Listen. Someone just came in.
Now, you got that. Randy Wyatt and a detective are not talking to
June. And she shouldn't be seeing anyone. She's sick.
I tried to keep them out, but I couldn't.
I'd
walk with you if they're doing.
Is everything all right, June?
Yes, Miss Benson. There's nothing wrong with June. I'm surprised you felt you had to see her when she's so ill.
Miss Benson, this is Mr. Carter, a friend of mine.
How do you do?
And I wanted him to see June.
Well, now that you've seen her, you better go. Come, June. I'll take you back to your room. You better lie down and be quiet.
All right, silly. But it's no use. It's no use.
Well, Mr. Carter, I guess we...
Yes. Come on, Wyatt.
I'm sorry that Phyllis seemed a little abrupt, but we're really very much worried about June. As I told you, Randy, she's exhibiting all the symptoms her mother had just before she was taken away.
Alex, this is Mr. Carter. He knew my father years ago.
How are you, Mr. Benson?
How do you do, sir?
Benson, do you happen to know where June was born?
June?
Yes.
But no, I don't think I do. Wait a minute. It seems to me I've heard Phyllis say that she was born in Barnstable.
And where's that?
Well, it's about an hour out of the city, I believe, on the River Turnpike. Phyllis, wasn't June born in Barnstable?
Yes, she was. Oh, Alex, I don't know what we're going to do with that girl. She's possessed with that one idea. And since Mother... Oh, I don't know what to do.
Come on, Mr. Carter. We better get out of here.
Yes. Our work is finished here. For now.
But, Nick, aren't you going to eat anything before you go?
We'll grab a sandwich and a cup of coffee on the way. Why, oh, Sim Carter, you're to go...
What are you expecting to find in Barnstable?
June was born there. If her birth certificate doesn't give us a clue to that clause in Kemple's will, I'll find somebody there who can. Betsy, you wait here at the office for me.
But what do you expect from me, Mr. Carter? You say you found the birth certificate in good order. After we finally got that guy to open up town hall so he could have a look. Boy, was he hopping mad at being called away from his supper.
Dr. Jessup, you signed the birth certificate, so you should be able to answer my question. What is there about June's birth that would cause her father to put that strange clause in his will?
I couldn't tell you, Mr. Carter. Mrs. Kemple came up here for a rest, and June was born while she was here.
Dr. Jessup, suppose I should tell you that I think someone is trying to make June think she's losing her mind because her mother did. Would that stir your memory?
Losing her mind because her mother... Oh, no, that's impossible. Why, she... pardon me, I must see who's at the door.
Certainly, we'll wait.
It's strange that they should come to the back door.
Nick, he knows something. Sure as you're a foot high, he knows something.
Yes, Waldo, I think he does. And I think he's going to talk.
Open the door!
Nick, sounds as if he did...
Dr. Jessup, what's wrong? Dr. Jessup.
You're right. See Leona Perkins. She... Look at Nick. He was shot twice, right through the chest.
So I see.
But we didn't hear no shots.
Silencer, apparently. Waldo, see if you can spot anyone out there.
Right, Nick. I'll get him.
Oh, poor guy. If I hadn't come here to end... Waldo! Waldo!
Did you... It's no good, Nick. I thought I saw a guy hiding in the trees there, so I took a couple of shots at him. I guess it was just shadows.
You ought to know better than to go shooting off that old .44 of yours blindly that way.
But, Nick, I...
Waldo,
want to...
you stay here. Call the sheriff. Tell him what happened. I'm going to find Leona Perkins before someone tries to eliminate her, too.
You got that, Patsy? Tell Matty to have his man keep constant watch on the Kemple house. And tell me just who goes in or out.
Uh-huh. And he's to wait until you come and report to you.
Right. I'll pick you up at the office on my way back. Oh, and have Randy Wyatt there, too, so he can go with us.
Where did you say you are now?
In Barnstable, at the home of Leona Perkins. She was June's nurse after she was born. She knows the answers if anyone does. All right, I'll see you at the office, Patsy. Sorry, Mrs. Perkins, but I had to get that call through without delay. Now, you know Dr. Jessup, of course.
Yes, of course. I worked with him for 15 years. He sent you to me?
Yes. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but Dr. Jessup has just been killed.
Dr. Jessup? Killed?
Yes, shot. By someone who wanted to keep him from telling me what I came to Barnstable to find out.
Dr. Jessup dead. I can't believe it.
Before he died, he told me to come to you. But you would tell me what the mystery is about June Kemple's birth.
Why are you asking these questions, Mr. Carter?
Because June's sanity is in danger.
June insane? She can't be.
Why not? Her mother was, I understand. Died in the sanitarium.
Then you understand wrongly, Mr. Carter. Her mother is perfectly sane and she's still alive. Alive and well.
What's that you say?
Do I look insane to you?
You? Why, no, no, of course not.
Mr. Carter, I am June's mother.
You? You are June's mother?
I am. June is really my daughter.
Miss Perkins, I'm afraid I don't understand. Why was she brought up as the Kemple's child?
Mrs. Kemple had one daughter, and she wanted another, desperately. But she knew she was gradually going out of her mind. And she was afraid if she bore another child, it too might be susceptible to the same dread disease. So she decided to adopt a baby, but secretly, to prevent any possible discrimination against it. She made inquiries in several places. Dr. Jessup heard of her search and came to me.
How did he happen to come to you?
He was my doctor. My husband had just been killed in an accident, and my baby was to be born in 3 days. We were very poor. And I was frantic with worry. I had no money, Mr. Carter, no relatives. I'd never worked a day in my life. I could see no way to provide for the child who was coming.
And you agreed to give up your baby?
Yes. In a moment of weakness, I did. When June was born, Dr. Jessup registered her as being born to Mrs. Kemple instead of to me. Oh, perhaps it was wrong of him, but he felt it was the wisest thing to do.
You've never seen her since?
No, Mr. Carter. Bitterly as I regretted my decision, I'd sworn I'd never try to see her again. And I never have.
Did anyone else beside you, the doctor, and the Kemples know of this?
No, not a soul. Even Phyllis was never told. She believes June to be her own natural sister.
I doubt that she does now. Mrs. Perkins, you must go back to the city with me at once. Not only June's sanity, but her life may be in danger at this very moment.
Did you say you found some real evidence, Nick?
The best in the world, Patsy. I found Mrs. Perkins here.
Well, I understand, Nick.
You'll know the whole story in a few minutes. That's as soon as we get to the Kemple's house.
Is it a plot against June, Mr. Carter? Is she really all right?
Yes, Wyatt, I believe so. It'll take time to get her back on her feet, but basically she's as sane as you or I.
But who would want to do a thing like this?
It'd only be one person. And how she found out about it, I don't know. But she did, obviously.
Mr. Carter, how much further? I promised once I'd never see June again, but now I...
That's one promise that is better broken than kept. Well, here we are. Oh, that must be Maddie's man across the street. You three go in. I'll be with you as soon as I get his report.
I must protest, Mr. Carter. This is outrageous.
Sorry,
this
Mrs.
time
Everett.
Of night.
It has to be done this way.
Everybody's here, Nick, all except Phyllis. She's been in bed with a migraine headache ever since dinner.
Well, we'll go ahead without her.
Okay.
June?
Yes?
You say various things happened to you that seem to indicate that you're losing your mind.
Yes, Mr. Carter. Just like my poor mother when she was losing her mind.
How do you know about your mother?
Why, Alex told me.
Alex told you. Mr. Benson, may I ask if you knew Mrs. Kemple?
Why, no, I didn't. She died before I met Phyllis.
And how do you know how she acted while she was going to pieces?
Well, I've heard the story from Phyllis.
Complete with details?
Why, yes.
Recently?
Why, I guess she has told me more in the last few weeks than she ever did before, but what are you getting at?
I won't let them take me away. I'll kill myself first. I will.
Steady, June, steady. That won't be necessary. There's nothing wrong with you mentally, and there never has been.
But all those queer things...
Every single one of those things is a trick, suggestion, planted in your mind.
But my mother died in that place.
No, June, you're wrong. She didn't.
Why, Ned?
June's mother is alive and well today. I'd like to introduce her to you. Mrs. Leona Perkins.
This is the most fantastic story I ever heard. Are you sure?
I am. I have positive proof. Dr. Jessup's story and Mrs. Perkins' story, which can be backed up with documentary proof. And if you want something you can see for yourself, look at June's little finger. I've just now noticed how she has the same peculiar little crook at the end of it that Mrs. Perkins has.
By golly, Nick, you're right. It's just the same.
You're my mother. My real mother.
Yes, June, darling. Your real mother.
Oh,
Mother. Mr. Carter, who in heaven's name would want to do this to June?
A person who was afraid that she might be susceptible to the thing that killed her mother, and consequently hated the person who wasn't. A person who wanted to prove that it was someone else, not her, who was the weak one.
Carter, do you realize what you're saying?
Unfortunately, Benson, I do.
But you mean that Phyllis... Phyllis?
Oh, of course he doesn't, Alex. That's sheer nonsense.
Mrs. Benson, didn't you help June write the note that broke her engagement to Randy Wyatt?
Yes, at her request.
After you talked me into doing it.
And didn't you suggest that June heard things and felt things? And then when you got her believing she did, didn't you suggest to Alex that those things were a sign of mental weakness?
She did. I can tell now. She was always asking me if I didn't feel this or hear that. I thought she was trying to help me, but...
I was trying to help.
Where have you been the last 2-3 hours?
In my room with a headache.
No, you weren't. You drove to Barnstable, shot Dr. Jessup so he couldn't tell me the secret and came back here. My man saw you come in. You sneaked in the back door and up to your room, changed your shoes because they got muddy in the doctor's backyard, and then you came down here to brazen it out. Randy, if you look, I'm sure you'll find the muddy shoes in her room, and you'll find the motor of her car still hot. And probably you'll find a gun in her car, too.
I'll take a look right now. Stay where you are, all of you. You may find the muddy shoes, but I've got the pistol right here, and I'm going to kill you all. You're a pack of sneaking...
Better take
filthy...
her away, officer, before she hurts someone.
Officer?
I'll take it. All right. No harm done. Alex, take her upstairs. Keep her in her room.
Yes, Mr. Carter. Come on, Phyllis.
Sure. Lock me up. Just the way they locked my mother up. You think I'm crazy, but I'm not. I'm as sane as any of you. I'll show you.
How could you do such a thing, Phyllis? Why should you hate me so?
Why shouldn't I hate you? I've hated you from the moment I found those old letters of Father's after he died. Those letters from Dr. Jessup, which gave away the whole story. Dr. Jessup said he hoped I'd never suffer as my mother did. Said he could understand how pleased Father was to know that there was no possibility of you having inherited any tendency to a mental weakness. I knew what he meant, and I hated you for it. I wish I'd killed you long ago.
Oh, come, Phyllis. You'll feel better in your own room. Mrs. Everett, will you come with us, please?
Of course, Mr. Benson.
Take your hands off me. What a terrible thing.
Yes. She never found those letters. This whole thing might never have happened. They not only turned her against June, they planted the fear of insanity in her own mind. And the hate and the fear together grew into a phobia that was too strong for her.
Mr. Carter, I don't know what to say. If there's any way I can repay you, you have only to name it.
Oh, yes, Mr. Carter. I feel as if a load had been lifted off my heart.
This is a wonderful thing you've done, Mr. Carter. A wonderful thing. God bless you for doing it.
Nick?
Hmm?
In the excitement, I forgot.
Forgot what?
Waldo.
Well, what about Waldo?
Waldo is being held in Barnstable on charge of killing Dr. Jessup.
What?
Yes. He called just before you got back. Said he'd try to explain what happened... But the sheriff didn't believe him. Especially since 2 shots had been fired from his pistol and 2 shots killed Dr. Jessup.
Oh, poor Waldo. I suppose the more they questioned him, the more excited he got that he finally talked himself right into his cell.
Well, you better do something about it, Nick, before Waldo goes crazy. Before he...
Okay, Patsy. May I use your phone, June?
Certainly.
Poor Waldo. Oh, operator, I want the sheriff's office in Barnstable. Yes, the sheriff's office, that's right. And I want to talk to the sheriff himself. Yes, the
Well, Nick, how about a little look into next week's story?
No sooner said than done, Hugh. It all started with a man being strangled in his hotel room in the very early hours of the morning.
And then went on to include a piece of silk torn from a shirt, a dictaphone record, and a missing wife.
Who was missing because her husband wanted it that way, but refused to stay missing when she received a letter containing a railroad ticket.
It was really the hotel name.
Patsy, save something for next week.
What do you call your story, Nick?
I call it The Case of the Dictaphone Murder.
Carter, Master Detective, which is produced and directed by Jock McGregor, is copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Pictured stories of Nick Carter appear in every issue of The Shadow Comics. In the broadcast of Nick Carter, Master Detective, Lon Clark is starred as Nick, Charlotte Manson is featured as Patsy. Original music is played by George Wright. Script is by Jock McGregor and Peggy Mayer. Any resemblance in these programs to actual persons, living or dead, or to actual places is purely coincidental. Nick Carter, Master Detective, is presented over most of these mutual stations each week at this same time. This is Hugh Sanders saying so long until next week.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.